Pickaxe.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello, and welcome back to The Review of Death, your fortnightly home for Doctor Who news and reviews. I am Matthew Toffolo. This is Billy Garrett John. Hello.
Hello. Now, Matt, not an awful lot has happened for us to discuss.
No, but something did happen the week we interviewed Al.
Yes.
That we didn't talk about.
What was that?
Season 2 being released on Blu-ray as part of the collection.
Oh, yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah. It is exciting.
I was going to ask something about classic seasons later.
Okay.
But I suppose we can get round to it now, because today we're going to be talking about The Abominable Snowman.
Omni Padme Hum.
Indeed. Mm. Which is, bless you, which has just come out on DVD, Blu-ray, shiny Blu-ray. That's a steel box thing. And I was looking at the episodes in that season. It's in season 5.
Yeah.
It's an absolute cracker of a season.
It's a really good season.
Which is the best black and white season of Doctor Who?
Ooh. I think that's possibly the one, isn't it?
Yeah, do you reckon?
I think it is.
I think Wheel lets it down a little bit.
Wheel lets it down, and The Ice Warriors is a bit iffy.
Yeah, that's 7 parts, isn't it?
It's 6, but it feels like 7.
Oh, okay, God. And we'll get round to it later, but I don't think I'm wired for 6-parters.
No.
Just in general.
Yeah.
But yeah, season 2, that's really exciting. There's a really good feature about David Whittaker that's on that set that I worked on for 2 days that was brilliant fun.
Yeah.
And it's very enlightening about the man. And going into it being like, I didn't realise we only had one photograph of David Whittaker.
No, not me.
And now we come out of this with an awful lot of really interesting stuff about David Whittaker. So look forward to that.
Very good.
The trailer was brilliant.
Oh, I think that's the best one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really good.
That and Sylve coming back in 24 Karat. Those are definitely
that was really good,
the
wasn't
top
it?
Two.
Yeah.
And some of those early ones with Katie were good, like the
maggots. They were nice. They were really good. The one I didn't really get was the one with Nicola Bryant.
Yes.
That one felt a bit weird.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, of all the things to revisit, the King of Kronos thing, which felt weird anyway.
Yeah, it did. I've never bought it as an ending for Perry.
No.
And I think to have it almost canonised now, I mean, Doctor Who's canon is all over the place, but it's one of those things where you think, I'd rather just pretend that she died in Mind Wheel. Not for any other reason than the fact that...
For the integrity of the character.
And it's a great ending.
It's a really good ending.
It's such a morbid, oh shit, like cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I can't believe that's happened to her.
I just have this vision now of someone running up to the Inquisitor after Colin leaves and goes, oh, sorry, m'lady, we've had some updated information. She did die.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Well, I've just told him... Never mind.
Don't fucking say a word.
No one mention it to him. Don't say anything.
It sounds better anyway, doesn't it?
That
she just died like that. So season 2.
Yeah, really
very
good.
Exciting.
Yeah, Maureen O'Brien came back, didn't she, for the trailer, which was fantastic.
Yes.
That was a really lovely trailer. Mm. They did a very good job with that.
And for a companion that you think, you know, what happened afterwards?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, this works. This is really nice.
Yeah.
It's fitting and it, you know... And the question has always been how they're going to tackle the black and white box sets.
Yes.
And if this is the template for that, then I think they're going to do a
good
sterling job.
Because
it seems like they're going to do like a big, meaty, retrospective doc for each one.
Yeah.
Because you can't, I mean, it's difficult doing them for each individual story, considering how many individuals maybe aren't around anymore to talk to. And also, like, those you know, stories have been spoken about before on the DVDs.
Yeah.
So it's nice to, for them to change tact a little bit.
Yeah.
This one's pricier than the other ones, though, isn't it?
It is, because the bloody seasons are so long. Mm. There's so many more stories. What is it? It's Planet of Giants, Dalek Invasion of Earth, The Rescue, The Romans, The Web Planet, The Crusade, The Space Museum, and then The Chase. So that's eight stories.
And they're all about nine parts long.
I know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I get it. It makes sense, you know, for those older sets.
Meanwhile, season three is going to be like two discs in a massive box with a load of empty spaces, just with a question mark in there. Like, we might be able to fill this up one day.
Maybe one day if we, you know, look for some more tapes in deepest, darkest Africa, maybe we'll find
Have you asked Stella? Have you said oi?
No, my other half's in Africa at the moment. She's travelling to countries that almost certainly will have Doctor Who stories in their vaults.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, she's a bit too tied up with her actual job.
I hope she said to the main star over dinner at this moment, like, we could be doing this programme, but how about you go looking for Doctor Who episodes?
Listen, you're a Hollywood actor. You've got shit tons of money.
Yeah.
Do you want to fund my boyfriend's excursion around Africa to find these missing tapes? If things pan out and I end up going to New Zealand for a bit next year, I might be able to look in their archives for any more sensor clips or things on that. Mm. That would be interesting.
That would be good.
They're probably not.
No, it's probably the first places they raided, I guess, haven't they?
Almost certainly.
Sadly.
There was
criticism, though, wasn't there, about The Crusade? Because obviously The Crusade is missing. People were like, why isn't it animated? But I don't necessarily think that it not being animated is a bad thing.
Why is that?
Well, maybe we'll go into that. Talking about today's episode.
Okay.
I'm being slightly harsh there. Yeah. But I don't think that the animations necessarily are always the best way to go.
Okay.
And I think for a story like The Crusade, which we've already heard a million times over, is very difficult because of all the costume changes and how many character models that would require.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a recon, which are very good. Mm. Like, I watched part of the one for Abominable Snowman. And I think, just to fill two episodes, why not? Why go to all that trouble of animating it?
I agree.
If the budget isn't there.
It might be controversial to some people, I don't know. But if we, let's move on and talk about The Abominable Snowman.
Yeah.
Because, look, it's why we're here. Mm. And it looks like it's going to be the last, for a while at least, animation that we get. Which is gutting, because they have been a staple of the DVD range for, well, since 2006, is it? That was when The Invasion came out, 2007?
Yes, it was, wasn't it? And then, because they had Invasion, then they didn't do any for ages.
For a long time, yeah.
Then they were sort of fairly regular.
And then they found this new funding model,
and
this new way of producing them. And it seemed to just really work. Mm. Like, things really clicked. I love the fact that we can now look at our shelves and go, never thought I'd have the Macra Terror, and not like one that I've printed off myself and stuck a loose recon on.
I never thought we'd own the Abominable Snow PG Men.
No, I know.
That's quite surprising.
I don't know what story you're talking about there.
No,
but, you know, apparently there's one called the Abominable Snowmen that's just been released.
Is there really? Oh, yeah.
If you looked at the spine, you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Going into this, did you have high hopes based off of Big Finish Creative's previous efforts? Because it's the only other one they've done before, is it Fury from the Deep? Or have they done...
They did Galaxy 4 as well, didn't they?
Of course.
Now, Galaxy 4 was boring, but it's a boring story.
Mm.
So, because I watched the animation and I thought, God, this is dreary. Then I watched episode 3 and I thought, yep, it's still dreary.
Yeah.
So
it's not the animation's fault.
It's not the animation's fault. It's just a very static episode of Doctor Who. And I think, you know, animated... You want a bit of movement.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, when you've got a story which is just people stood around chatting for most of it, you know, what can you do?
Do you want to copy and paste that statement and put Abominable Snowman at the front of it as well?
Well, I saw the trailer for Abominable Snowman. I thought, oh, wow, this looks wicked. And I like the story.
Mm.
I've listened to the audio version. I've watched the Loose Cannon recon. I've read the Target book.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And we all did. So we all watched it. Me, Jonathan and Annie, we all sat down and watched it. We were very excited.
Mm.
We all had a perceived idea of the story going into it.
Did you watch the real episode 2 or did you watch the animated episode 2?
So we watched episode 1 widescreen colour, much to everyone else's criticism. But I always say, no, this was how it was made and intended to be watched.
I didn't even think twice about putting the colour one on. That was, I went straight for
really?
That.
Really? Yeah. And I sort of said, I think Billy will watch it in black and white. So it'll give us a...
I don't think it makes sense if it's not 16 by 9.
Yeah.
Because, oh, sorry, 4 by 3.
Yeah.
Because, like, the intention with these animations is to widen the scope of the original story from a visual perspective.
Yeah.
Rather than the invasion and some of the other earlier animations. I mean, yeah. Obviously, they all take artistic license and there's more Cybermen on the moon than there could ever have been in a TV studio.
Yeah.
But I think with these ones, you really have to appreciate the work and the colour that... It's been put in there for a reason.
Exactly. So I said, you know, I will never watch it in colour widescreen ever again. I will always watch it in black and white because that's just how I roll. So we watched part one and we sort of looked at each other and we said, crikey. Anyone else? I was like, I was nodding off during that. And we all said, yeah, we were all nodding off during that. I was like, should we watch the actual episode two? Because I'd seen on Twitter that everyone was raving about how good it looked.
Yeah, I haven't looked at it yet.
Holy shit, it looks amazing.
Really?
The stuff on location, the transfer, I don't know if they have the actual film transfers or what. It looked stunning.
Did you watch it on Blu-ray?
No, on DVD, and it still looks really good. It was incredible. We were just agog, honestly. It was so good.
So you watched, and then did you go straight into watching 3, 4, 5, and 6 after that?
No, we had a break.
Yeah.
We watched 3 another day.
Yeah, I did the same
and
thing.
And then we watched 4, 5, and 6 spread out on Saturday.
Okay.
I think. But it was, it's this weird thing, like we had never noticed that there's no music.
Mm.
There's no incidental music throughout the whole story. And the whole thing just feels empty.
Mm.
It's really bizarre, even though it looks amazing. Like I think the landscape stuff and the set design, it's all fantastic. The character models are cool. I don't necessarily agree with what they've done in terms of the character models for the monks.
Oh, really?
I understand why they did it. But for me, as someone who will always, from now on, watch episode 2, because I would rather watch the surviving episode than the animation.
Yeah.
I then go, oh, no, my head's all gone weird because that character does not look like that guy.
I get that. I didn't watch the... surviving episode 2.
Yeah.
So for me, it wasn't that much of a...
It didn't matter when I watched episode 1.
No.
But as soon as I watched episode 2, it cocked my brain up.
And I think that it's probably, and I'm sure you agree, it's best that they, you know, actually use the ethnicities of the characters
I know
you think that. But,
Padma
Sambhavar is quite a departure from what we see in Snaps.
Yes.
What
did you think about his redesign?
The UK number one single when this episode came out was Engelbert Humperdinck. I'm probably going to be more favourable to the animation than you might be.
Right.
But I will say this. I watched the first 3 episodes... on Sunday morning, I was sat on my sofa with a bowl of cereal.
Yeah.
I had my pyjamas on, and I was watching the animation, and I thought, this is great. Doctor Who is a cartoon.
Yeah,
it really works.
Yeah.
And this really works.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of... I mean, the design of it generally is beautiful.
Oh, yeah, that's
amazing. The way that they've designed the monastery is fantastic. But it did make me think... And this might be sacrilege, considering how much everybody got their panties in a twist about stuff that got redacted from Macro Terror. If they ever do any more missing episode animations, I would much rather give me all 6 parts with a decent photo telesnap recreation, and then maybe trim that 6 episodes down to 90 minutes and animate a 90-minute abridged version of it.
Right.
Because I just don't think that... there are some episodes that just do not translate, I don't think, to animation.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are some things this animation could have done differently,
yep.
maybe, to make it feel like less of a 6-episode mammoth. And I watched three episodes, went out for the day, come back in the evening, and I watched the last three.
Yeah.
But I if they ever do any more animations, I just, for a six episode story, I think you need, like, and one that you can put on BBC America early morning for kids to watch.
Yeah.
Like a cut down version of this, the adventure.
Like the omnibuses.
Yeah.
I
don't think you need.
Yeah, I mean, there were moments watching it where I was like, and we've had it with all the releases, I think, that those silent moments.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of them in this one because there's no music.
Yeah.
And you're just like, right, well, something would be happening here, but obviously we don't know what would be happening here.
Yeah.
So we've just got these figures just sort of stood around in a big set, not
it
really doing anything.
Of the first version of Power a lot.
Yeah.
That had a lot of that sort of just twitching and waiting around for things to happen and people leaning and blinking and looking at each other.
And I think because it is such a small cast, it's not a massive cast, is it really, this story?
No.
You know, you've got the few monks, and there's one monk who every time he appeared on screen, we said another one bites the dust because he looked exactly like Freddie Mercury.
I didn't notice.
He's got a moustache. He looks like Freddie Mercury.
I love it.
And then at the end of the story, when they're leaving the monastery, we were like, oh, he's going off to London now to record Bohemian Rhapsody with the rest of them, with Brian May and everybody. It was just there are moments in this story where it's the monastery is so big and there's like three characters in that main hallway area.
The kind of courtyard.
The courtyard, where the statue is. That was good when that statue crushed that monk. That was brilliant.
I like when you first saw that, you were like, well, there's some kind of like real photographic elements in here. I thought that meshed together really nicely.
And it's just, when you've got a big wide shot and you've got a couple of people
that
in there.
That was the problem.
It just feels a bit empty. And again, when you have no soundtrack, it makes it feel even more empty because you know, well, if this was being shot at the time, the actors would be moving about or there's facial expressions going on, but obviously we can't do that. So obviously they're limited with what they can do. And obviously they're limited by the budget.
Massively,
you know, I don't, as someone who has never worked on these things, I have no idea how much it would cost to go, oh, I'll just cut into a close-up here.
Exactly.
That could cost friggin' loads. I don't know. Throughout the whole process of watching this, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, well, I am trying to be aware of what budgetary constraints and
technical
limitations.
And production constraints.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. But you don't need that many mid shots and long shots. I mean, like, I was begging for just to get a close-up of somebody in some shots, like some sequences. It just needed that extra angle just to visually freshen things up. Because like you say, you are just, like when the Doctor first walks into the monastery and he stands there at the door, and then you get these, I mean, there's like 2 10-second static shots or kind of slightly panning around the room. I get you're setting the scene.
Yeah.
But I don't think you need to. That was when I first thought you could cut
this.
So much.
That was
of this
exactly the moment I was thinking as well.
And I'd much rather sit down and watch a 90-minute cartoon of this story.
Yeah.
And then if I fancy watching all six with the actual visuals, then I'll do that. But.
And I think the trouble with all the long shots is that it breaks the illusion somewhat because none of the characters cast shadows on the floor.
No.
And then suddenly you're like, oh, they're not in that space. They feel flat.
And I'm only looking at their legs and their, and their feet when they're walking. It's just like, God, it must be really hard to animate feet.
Yeah.
I
mean, obviously it is completely not comparable at all, but I'm going to compare it anyway. When I used to do my action figure things, you know, I would try almost always never to shoot anyone walking because it was impossible to do and it looked weird. And even though the mouths and eyes didn't move, there was no facial expressions. Christ, I would cut between people talking just to, you know, that person is the one speaking and it just makes it feel a bit more dynamic. So it feels even more annoying here where you're like, well, you have people moving.
Yeah.
You have that animated movement. Just cut to someone chatting. But like we said, if it's the budget that is a problem and it makes more sense to do it wide or mid.
I don't want to complain about it because we've
got it.
Yeah. And it's lovely to have.
Yeah.
I just think it might be a casualty of, look, these need a lot of money.
Yeah.
And these maybe need more time.
Yeah.
Or maybe the current model of doing them this way, we're now reaching the limits with the money that we currently have of making them dynamic animations and reconstructions. Because you look at this and you compare it to, and I know it's not everybody's cup of tea and it's certainly not one of my favourites, but The Reign of Terror.
Yeah.
And how much movement. Yeah. And
I mean, that cut too much.
Exactly. Yeah. That is like one end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And then this is another.
Yeah.
And they're both trying to recreate a similar environment and a similar sort of pace.
Mm.
One of them succeeds more than the other.
Yeah.
Is all it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just think that, I don't know, I don't think I can watch another 6-part animation in this style.
Yeah.
I think I would have to, and if I did, I'd have to break it up more.
Yeah.
And that's also because I'm 6-part averse, apart from Genesis the Daleks.
Mm.
I don't really like episodes that are longer than 4 or 5 parts.
Yeah, watched that on Sunday, Genesis of the Daleks, with the boys.
Story.
Yeah, they loved it.
Watched it all the way through?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's easy with Genesis.
Yeah, we broke for lunch, and then we finished it off. And
boys, here's your schedule for the day.
Yeah.
You'll watch episodes 1 to 3 of Genesis of the Daleks, then you will have lunch for half an hour, and then we will reconvene in the dining room.
Pretty much. And they loved it. And Mum sat down and watched it. Because the kids always were saying to Mum, Amelia was saying to Mum, oh, what's your favourite
Doctor... Aren't you sick of this yet?
Yeah, he said, what's your favourite Doctor Who story? And she was like, none of them. She's like, I can't stand it. She said, oh no, I like Black Orchid. Because I guess that's more like an ITV whodunit that she would normally watch.
It's 2 episodes. She doesn't have to sit there for bloody 2.5 hours.
But she was watching this one, and the first episode ended, and she turned around and she said... She said, that was pretty good, wasn't it?
Oh my God.
And we were like, yeah? She's like, yeah. She said, I got to speak as I find. She said, that was actually pretty good. She said, you know, and I've seen a lot of shit once.
Let's get your mum to do a commentary of Black Orchid.
Oh,
that would be good fun. That would be brilliant.
Because she was like, oh, can we show that one to the... No, I think, yeah, I think she said, oh, we could show that one to the boys. I don't mind watching that one. And then she was like, oh no, there's
I know you don't want to scare them, but you don't want to bore them to death either.
I like Black Orchid. Mm. And I liked it as a kid.
Fair enough. Yeah, so I mean, I think that's as much as we can really say about the animation.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's much more I have to weigh in on.
No, I mean...
The Yeti, what do you think of the Yeti? Oh, okay, well, there's another bit to talk about. Go on, talk about
the Yeti. Well, every time the Yeti came on screen, we all went, oh, they just look so cute and cuddly.
They do.
But even in the real story, they look cute and cuddly.
It would have been difficult to translate that unless you went, well, let's make them look like the web ones.
Yeah. That would have been wrong.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're big arses wibbling and wobbling about, and they don't roar.
No, they don't. They don't make any noise.
No, I was really surprised. I was like, when are they gonna?
There's that fight that one of them has when in the animation it just sort of knocks a couple of people over.
Yeah.
But then you don't want to animate it lifting somebody over its head and going, wah! Like that, like Mortal Kombat.
But oh, that would have been amazing.
I really like them in this story. I think they've got a really good presence. I think the trouble is, and we'll mention him now, Padmasambhava.
Yeah.
What do you make of his new design?
I watched it and I went, oh, I've seen you somewhere before. Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Yeah. Oh my God.
He looks like a Cartoon Network.
Yeah.
Courage the Cowardly Dog.
With the green glowing eyes as well.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I think it would have been fine if they hadn't have given him that like weird skew with mouth.
Vagina mouth, yeah.
Vagina mouth.
Yeah.
And like all the weird teeth. Mm. And it just made him look like he was sort of smiling the whole time.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, it just was a bit weird.
And I think that Padmasambhava, I reckon, is up there with your Suteks and your Omegas
really
in terms
scary.
Of all powerful.
Yeah.
Fuck you up. Yeah. I can levitate, motherfucker.
That was amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
That was so good.
That whole sequence at the end was brilliant.
We were like, holy shit.
Yeah.
He is
and
not messing around.
Like, Padmasambhava, great intelligence, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's a distinction that sort of muddies my kind of... We've always said the Doctor Who stories that typically don't work for us, generally. Mm. It's because the villain maybe doesn't have as strong a presence or you don't quite know what they're getting at with their plan.
Yeah.
But Padmasambhava slash Great Intelligence
certainly
has a lot of presence.
Yeah.
That voice is terrifying.
It's so scary.
It's really frightening.
Yeah.
And, you know, it works on audio. And, like, the, you know, that works brilliantly, that voice. Yeah.
Well, this was the thing. There were a few times when watching the animation, I was shutting my eyes, not just because I was falling asleep, but I was closing my eyes and thinking, I think I might be enjoying this more imagining it rather than watching it on screen.
And I think when you saw him through the veil...
That was wicked,
That was really effective.
Yeah.
But I don't think that when you see what he looks like, the voice and the power and the grotesqueness of his voice at times really translates to what he ends up looking like.
Yeah.
And I loved when he turned into dust.
Yeah.
When he was Thanos. Cool. That was really cool.
Yeah.
And obviously the levitation stuff was good. But, you know, maybe it's the design style, but his face didn't seem textured enough for me.
He felt like he was from a different thing. Yeah. He just felt like he was from another production.
A different asset they dragged in. Yeah.
It was really weird. And like when you compare to how he looked like in the original thing, I know there's not that many images of him in the original. Obviously, he was just a dude in, like, latex makeup and stuff. And I just sort of thought, oh, you know, I get what they were going for, that he was old and mummified, and he was like this cadaver. And I think it was a clever idea.
That's a great idea. That's definitely the way you would take it if you didn't know anything about that story and you thought he's being kept alive by this presence.
Yeah.
He'd obviously be wizened and ancient. And
I think, you know, maybe he shouldn't have been in the white robes. Maybe he should... Because in the...
Naked.
bollock naked. I wanted to see a shriveled mummified penis on
I can picture it like Dr. Manhattan's schlong flailing around in Watchmen when he floats in the air.
No,
that,
I just
that is a big one, isn't it, Jimmy?
Yeah. Oh, no, there's a little one.
Years have not been kind to you, Padmasambhava.
Back 300 years ago when I was here as William Hartnell.
It was a right handful, I can tell you.
Yeah, you know, I think he would have been, you know, in the actual episode, he's in more ornate robes. Mm. And I think, that might have just been a bit better. It needed a bit of colour to make him pop a bit,
I think. Just a bit of dandruff on his shoulders or something.
Just look, tatty it up or something, like moth-eaten.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's a minor quibble. I liked the web effect coming out of the cave. That was cool.
That reminds me.
Yeah.
So what is the plan? What does the Great Intelligence want? Because I mentioned there was mentions of he doesn't just want the monastery, he wants the whole mountain, and da 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 da. What? Why? What? How? Why? When?
I don't know.
So there's because
he wants corporeal form, doesn't he? I think the idea is he's just going to consume the planet and then move on to the next one.
Okay.
I think.
Okay. Right.
I don't know if the Web of Fear, if you watch them back to back, perhaps that fleshes it out a bit.
Maybe. Yeah. It's. I mean. It didn't seem like there was a villain plan.
No.
It just kind of seemed like, you know, bad man wants to do bad thing. And we'll do bad thing. Mm. And that's kind of it.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I don't need my Doctor Who stories to have any great weight or meaning behind the intention of the villain. But when I'm sat there for 6 episodes, I kind of want a bit of a reason for all this happening. Yeah. And, you know?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And I was... Did you notice the callback... Well, the call forward to the snowmen.
No. Oh, the big thing that they smash
orb
up.
Thing. Yeah. I thought that was quite cool. Yeah. Jonathan and Annie were not impressed. They were like, no, it wasn't there. It shouldn't have been in it. But I thought, no, that was a clever way of tying that because the snowmen is set before this story.
Exactly. Yeah,
for the Great Intelligence.
This isn't like a historical. It's a contemporary enough story.
Yeah.
That Travers knows what a robot is.
Yeah.
And can go, that'd be preposterous. Like, you know, it's a modern enough story. What do you think of Professor Travers?
Oh, he's brilliant, isn't he?
Brilliant. What
really
a character.
Good. Very good. And I mean, it's great because he comes back in Web of Fear.
Mm.
It's a shame he doesn't come back more, really.
No, I think the same of Padmasambhava.
Yeah.
Or the Great Intelligence. I kind of feel like this is a great setup for...
Yeah.
It's almost like, I mean, obviously the Web of Fear becomes the sort of template for maybe if we do Doctor Who on Earth, it can be like this all the time.
Yeah.
But having like Travers, maybe Travers coming back is the first time they've gone, well, we can have like allies on Earth that sometimes help the Doctor out.
Because they even mention going to see him in the invasion, don't they? But he's not
there.
They
do, yeah.
So it's nice they've got this like cool little, across those two seasons, this sort of little character hook.
And interesting as well when you think, that there's only one story, I think, between this and Wen.
Yeah, it's Ice Warriors.
And then they're back all of a sudden.
Yeah, wow.
Like, obviously, you wouldn't have got a reaction quickly enough from an audience to commission the script and shoot it and get it done and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I would imagine. Mm. But they just went, this works.
Yeah, like,
this
they obviously is a just good really format. Liked it.
It's a good story.
Yeah.
We just need to make them look less like teddy bears. Mm. And we're away.
Yeah.
You know, let's make them look less like Merkins and we'll be doing a good job.
I mean, I can't really think what the plots were to any of the stories, but does the great intelligent stories that come along with Matt Smith... I always forget he's even in the Matt Smith era.
No, I know. I mean, when I think of the great intelligence, I only see Richard E. Grant going... That is the embodiment of the great intelligence for me. It's not some crazy, beautiful, omnipotent space, cosmos-y galaxy thing.
Yeah, and didn't they, like, wank around with it or something and... Did they make him like he was like a little sad boy or something?
Oh,
and it was
probably
his personality.
It was he needed love.
Probably because that was that the Stephen Moffat era in a fucking nutshell.
God, you're always bashing Stephen Moffat.
Oh, I know.
You're terrible.
All you need is love.
Finally, he's been able to name a Beatles song.
I know. I was waiting for that.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
A few standout scenes and moments that I thought were quite good.
Yep.
I think the cliffhanger to episode 3 is very good with the Yeti waking up around Victoria, because you've got like I've forgotten his name, not Timotei, what's his name? Tomney. running Timotei. Around do you use Timotei? He's wandering around trying to find her, and then she wanders into the, because she's trying to be somewhere else and she's hiding, and then she ends up in the same room as the
Yeti.
Because otherwise,
you assumes that I paid enough attention or was
true.
Still awake at that point.
That's true. Episode 6, and I have no idea what anybody wants and why. Songson killing Chrisong.
Yeah, that was good.
Really good. Because I was shocked that they killed him off. I completely forgotten. I thought, shit. Like, yeah, he just shanked him.
That was a shanked, wasn't it?
Yeah, he shanked him, yeah.
I was really surprised, and I thought it was done well. But my God, he is the worst security man
that
ever existed.
I know.
Do you mind holding my knife? You slightly suspicious man.
Yeah, I know. It's like, we've just had a conversation where I know that you're a wrong'un, and this I'm not convinced by anymore either. But yeah, take my knife and while I turn my back on you. Like, you know. But I thought that was really good. Similarly, I thought that when the Doctor finally meets Padmasambhavar, and he's begging him for help, it's like, whoa, that's really affecting. Mm. Like, all good villains have that sliver of, you know, tragedy to them.
Yes.
You know, Davros is, you know, he's confined to this chariot and he's horribly, you know, disfigured and all this sort of stuff. And he's a ranting, raving lunatic, so you can't feel too sorry for the guy. And
but like Shara's Jack, you know, he probably would...
But he's the most tragic, operatic, tragic figure of them all.
Yeah.
But Padmasambhavar's like, you know, this is an old friend of mine who's come to help. He's brought back the Holy Ganta and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I am being confined to this form.
Yeah.
And it's really, quite affecting, I thought.
Yeah. There were some really good bits where they obviously went off script, where you had the moment where the abbot was talking to Padmasambhavar and it all went black behind him and he sort of zoned out. I was like, that's a cool directorial choice. And also later on where he talks about how he met the intelligence.
And you see the galaxy.
Yeah, I thought that was very good.
I liked the effect of the pyramid.
Yeah.
Kind of all of its web tendrils going out. That looked really neat as well.
Yeah. And the balls moving around, they were good as well.
When I looked at it, I thought it shouldn't be rolling like BB-8. It should be totally static along the floor. I can't imagine it not, you know, it shouldn't be glowing. It should just be totally
yeah,
frictionless, just moving like a really crap prop around the floor. That's when it kind of, for me, I'm like, yeah, obviously it's better, but it threw me.
It was too good.
Too good. Let's talk about Pat in this story. I thought that first bit when he goes out for a scout around and then comes back and is like, yeah, nothing's wrong. Don't worry. Just stay in here. Make sure you stay in here. Don't go outside. Yeah. Nothing's wrong. It's fine. That was really cool.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, when people like Sylvester McCoy and Peter Davison, and when they say, well, I was trying to call back to that slightly sort of ambiguous, I don't know if he's on the right side of this kind of thing.
Yeah.
I always thought, I don't think Pat's always like that, though. I don't think you could say that's a core trait of his character.
No.
That he's manipulative in the same way that the Seventh Doctor is.
Yeah.
But in this case, certainly, it's like, you bastard. Like, you're not telling Jamie, of all people, like, you know, your best friend.
You're
not telling him that there's something out there that you can face together or whatever. It's just, I thought that was an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that whole first episode, or that whole TARDIS scene at the beginning is really, really nice. There's a lovely little moment between all of them, you know, rummaging through the chest. And, you know, there was a great bit when he opens the chest and all the cutlery goes smashing to the floor. Yeah. It's like, that's a very Second Doctor thing to do.
I noticed that a couple of times in this story, but certainly in that first scene, Pat's doing a lot of his covering for his, he's forgotten his line. He's doing that quite a few times in that one. I thought it was quite interesting.
It's really good. And it's, again, it's, I think this story just highlights how tragic it is that we can't watch the actual thing because, you know, I say every time we review one of these stories, with all the goodwill in the world, you're never going to capture Patrick Troughton's facial expressions and how good he is.
Can you imagine trying to, I mean, they've done it with Charder, but like doing Tom in animation form.
No,
it's just,
it
doesn't quite work.
No,
you can't get that dynamism, you know, he's always fizzing all the time.
Yeah.
And you can't really translate that.
This is, I mean, I know what the answer is going to be, but do you kind of regret the fact that they made Charder as an animation?
I regret that they've done it so many times. You know, like, come on, we could have done something else.
This is what I mean. It's like, oh.
Or like, could you not have, like, with the money that you spent on that, maybe just, like, spread it out, giving that one a couple more grand or whatever.
Yeah, something like that. Or, you know, I guess now that we're not going to get Wheel in Space, which would have completed season
five.
Yeah. For me, I'm a bit like, oh.
And I think that would actually be fine with this animation style.
Yeah.
Because I think the thing that makes it flat looking, which I think is the problem with this design, is that there's no real kind of depth in, maybe it's different in black and white actually, to be fair, but it doesn't feel like there's any real depth in the space that they're using.
Yeah.
Like there's in the Abbott's sort of main like chamber where he's talking to Padmas Ambavar, you don't really get an impression of like depth in the lighting necessarily. It's all quite flat and one colour. And but I like the fact, you could expand the backdrops. But I
and like for the Wheel in Space, you know, you could have a big bridge with lots of people at computers
and
doing
stuff.
And lots
of lights flashing in the background.
Yeah,
just to
and it would just make it feel
happen.
A bit more alive.
Exactly. And I think it's fine when it's confined to a studio and, you know, you're going to make it pretty much look like it did on the show because, you know, you don't want to go too crazy with a story like that. But I think the wheel would really suit this animation.
Yeah.
I just think the scope of this story is just slightly too big.
And I think, especially watching it in colour, it's like, oh, it just feels a bit too, weirdly enough, too colourful.
Mm.
Like, so much of the atmosphere of this story comes from it being in black and white, like moodily lit and stuff. You think, oh, if only they went more for that rather than being realistic, bright, we're in the Himalayas.
Snow everywhere.
Yeah, you
it's
know.
It's like white and grey and blue.
Yeah, you know, perhaps they could have gone more misty and weird. And I don't know, it's,
I didn't think it contrasted that well when they're in the cell
and
they've got the door open and they've obviously got it so that it's like a kind of a walkway.
Yes.
And you've got the blue in the background.
Yeah.
But it's just like sky blue.
Yeah.
It's just one colour.
Yeah.
And so it breaks everything up a bit too much.
Yes.
You know?
Well, this is the thing. When we were watching it, Annie kept saying like, oh, I didn't realise this was all outside.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, normally. I thought they were, you know, in a building.
Yeah.
You know.
Or just have some, I say just, like, I know how much money it costs to do
it. Yeah, just do that.
Just have a cloud just every now and again, just go drift. By, like they a screensaver.
They did have some goats.
They did have some goats.
Yeah.
I guess because they couldn't remove them from the soundtrack and they were like, we've got to put some goats in now because you can hear them in the background.
There's that good bit when they were all leaving and there's like this goat being led along. I was like, oh.
That was sweet.
He's good. The Yeti at the end.
I was going to ask that. I would love to see how they... I mean, part of me thinks that Travers just sees it off screen and runs off.
Well, I got a funny feeling it is just just one of the Yeti suits.
Oh, okay.
Because in the reconstruction, because I watched most of part six of the reconstruction, because I wanted to compare how they did it, because I think that whole last sequence in the animation is fantastic.
Yeah, it is.
With him floating up in the air, going, you know, Super Saiyan or whatever. But he does, well, from the screen grabs, he doesn't quite fly up into the air. Like something from The Exorcist.
Yeah.
But it still looks really cool. And they just used the model because they animated all of the Yeti in the photo reconstruction.
Yeah, yeah.
So they've got all these CGI Yeti running around.
Great.
They look really good.
Yeah.
And then you've got like CGI Jamie and Tomney going in, smashing stuff up.
God.
It was there was more action and animation in that little snippet, which was like 8 frames than in most of the actual animation itself. It was weird. And I was like, well, do that.
Yeah.
You know, all right, you can't do it for 6 episodes. But if you could do a bit more of that in these photo recons, holy shit, it would liven them up so much. Like, literally, there's a bit where Tomney picks up this pole, chucks it to Jamie, he grabs it, and then he smashes the sphere.
Wow.
And that is all animated.
I'm going to have to watch that.
Because like episode one, it's your standard sort of screen grab, screen grab, edit, photoshopped screen grab, you know.
Sure.
And it works fine. But then when you get to that action bit at the end, we watched it and we were like, my God, they went to town on this bit.
Yeah.
And I guess it needs to be. And then it's weird because you have all that and then you have the bit where the mountain explodes and it's like 2 screen grabs of like a mountain and then
bang.
and it's just stuck there for ages and you're like,
oh, God.
Okay, yes, it exploded. We get it. It's like, a shame we can't see this actually happening. But
yeah, I think I mean, I don't know what it says about the animation that when you're watching it, you think, I really want to see how they did that.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that's kind of an issue if you're thinking about what it really looked like.
Yeah.
Because the artistic license they take with these new animations is brilliant.
Yeah.
I think that for artistic license, Fury from the Deep
is
the best they've done because those big, you know, foundry type facilities look brilliant. And there's no way that it would have looked that good.
No, of course not.
On the show, no chance.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you've got to go, how did they do the Pavasambhava bit? Or, you know, what do the Yetis look like wandering around inside the monastery? Because there's none of that.
No.
There's nothing in terms of material, really, of the Yetis in the studio.
No.
I'd love to have seen a bit of that.
Yeah.
But
yeah, especially that one that, like, wakes up and breaks out and stuff.
And then, and then wanders off and, I think, all in all, I'm happy we have it, of course.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and just because we have some criticisms of it doesn't mean that we think it's rubbish.
Or no.
Shouldn't be on our shelves.
Oh, God,
My God, we're so lucky to get this stuff. Doesn't make it immune from criticism, obviously.
No, of course not.
But, you know, it was lovely to experience it in a different way, this story.
Oh, for sure.
It's definitely got a lot of pluses. But it did kind of make me think, I don't know if this is the right model for stories of this length.
Yeah.
And it did make me think, is there another way that we can keep these animations coming?
Mm.
But, you know, if it means, I don't know, we'll ask everybody out there.
Yeah.
If it meant that you got an animation a year, but on the release, you got a really, really good 90-minute cut down of a 6-part story. But if you wanted it, you've also got the telesnap reconstruction of all 6 episodes, and they put a bit of money into that as well.
Yeah.
Would that be okay?
Yeah.
Would people be all right with that? Or would you rather have the animations as they are,
at the moment,
all 6 as they are? Because I think there's an argument to say that maybe...
Oh, there's definitely a for and against for... Yeah,
you
definitely.
Know, and especially... And I don't mean to sound morbid, but especially as the people buying this stuff... that, you know, it's going to exclude most young people from buying this release.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact it doesn't have a Dalek on the cover doesn't help it on the shelves.
Yeah.
And then the fact that when you put it in, it's six episodes of quite static adventure.
Yeah.
Because that's the story is slow. Isn't it? So there's no music.
Yeah.
And you've got the Yeti and they're quite lumbering. So I sort of feel like maybe there's an argument to do it in a different way. But
yeah, it's true. And then it makes you sort of think, although they've been very successful with the Dalek animations, because, I mean, Evil of the Daleks was superb. You know, you do sort of think, like, crikey, how would they have done Dalek Master Plan? Such a mammoth story as that. You know,
I know.
You know, is that just completely out of the realms of possibility? You know, without doing something like saying, well, we'll cut the Feast of Stephen because nothing really happens that is relevant to the whole plot of the story.
Yeah. But you have to, on the disc, you have to have all of them on there in some respect.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So maybe with the way that photo editing has come along, and I'm not saying you do it like those apps that can animate people's mouths talking.
Yeah.
But because photo editing has come such a long way, maybe you just put a load of money into six episodes of Telesnap reconstructions and see what that looks like.
Yeah, yeah. Because
I'd happily watch the Dalek Master Plan like that. I don't think I could watch this animation over 12 episodes.
No.
You know, I don't think it translates, but
yeah,
that's just me.
Did you watch the making of?
I didn't watch Trenton in Tibet. No, I didn't get time for it.
It's really good.
Yes.
It's really good. Chris loves his drone shots.
He does love his drone shots.
And why not? Because it is such a fantastic location.
I know. And to get a police box up there.
I know. To see him, Fraser, see the TARDIS. It was really nice. It was really quite touching. I mean, God, it was fantastic. The first thing we saw when we were watching it was like, we need to do a little road trip, I think.
I mean, I've been saying this for a long time. I think we should do a little location trip.
Little recce.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really sweet. Obviously, you know, being a story of the 60s, the number of contributors are limited because most of the cast are no longer with us.
Mm. Do you know it's harder to get contributors for early 70s stories than it is for a lot of the 60s?
Wow. Well, yeah, you think that most of the whole cast is... Yeah.
And the writers.
And the writers,
The earliest script editor that you can speak to now is Chris Bidmead.
Never.
Mm. He is the earliest script... He's the oldest surviving script editor from the show.
Bloody hell.
Mm.
That is insane.
I know.
Wow.
And on that morbid thought, ladies and gents...
Oh, God.
We'll end it here.
Yeah, but the making of was great.
Yeah.
It was lovely.
I will watch it when I get back.
Give it a watch.
I will watch it.
They talk about some really interesting stuff about what they did with Padmasambhava that didn't end up in the televised version. And like when we heard about it, it was like, wow, that's wicked.
Wow.
And then they were like, yeah, it was too much, so we had to, they cut it. And we were like, oh.
So it was shot but cut.
I guess so, yeah.
I look forward to seeing that.
So yeah, it was really good. But like we said, it's a nice release.
Yeah.
It's a shame that this is the last one for the foreseeable future.
It really is, yeah. And I guess it does make you realise what you lose out of the range. Like, you realise how much the range has given you when you're like, well, it might be the last one.
Yeah.
At least for a while. I don't think it will be the last one ever.
I'm sure they'll find, you know, they'll find financing somewhere... In some capacity.
I think when the new show comes out,
maybe
a lot of people are hedging their bets on it being the thing that kind of reignites some elements of the franchise that have maybe been laying a bit dormant or maybe needed a bit more of a cash injection or whatever. I think that some people are going to come forward and go, I'll put some money into that.
I think that's it, isn't it? And it's funny because after we did that interview with Al, I kept seeing people saying stuff like, well, if they haven't got the money to do these things, then take the license away from character and give it to someone who does. I was like, no, you don't understand.
Yeah.
No one's watching Doctor Who. And no
well,
one
relative to
the boom period. Yeah, exactly. So no one wants to put money into it. Why would you put money into something that people aren't going to buy?
Yeah.
And it's all very well people on the internet saying, well, I'd buy one and my friend on the forums would buy one. Mm. Yeah, but when you put that all together, that's about 30 people.
I know.
You know, that's not...
I,
That's not a business, is it?
There was a lot of stuff that came out of the Al interview, which I'm immensely proud of, and you did such an amazing job putting it together. That just make you think, it makes you realise, like, does anybody listen to anything anyone says?
It's so annoying.
I was going through the replies. This is me having a moan.
Yeah.
I was going through the replies on Twitter.
Mm.
And, all you need to do is to do a Sacha Dhawan, is to get a new head sculpt and do that. He literally says in watch the video, he literally says why he won't do that.
Yeah.
Same with an Aimly Master. It winds me up. It's like, God, it's literally there.
Yeah.
You know, just listen. And again, just like you said in that case, how many people are actually going to buy it?
Yeah.
I'm not just talking about new series action figures. I'm talking about Doctor Who merchandise in general.
Whether
it's a Sergeant Benson or if it's a Yeti or, if they re-released the Pat Troughton in fur coat and stuck it in B&M.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure loads of Doctor Who fans would go and grab it and they would make as many as the Doctor Who fans would buy. But if they made it to the same volume as the Jodie Whittaker action figures...
Yeah.
You'd get shit tons of Pats in fur coats with TARDISes on the shelves. Because the audience, as big as we like to think Doctor Who audience is, just kind of, in a lot of respects, isn't there.
Yeah. And I said it on this podcast before, how my brother's colleague said to a group of, I think they were year sevens, mentioned Doctor Who, and they all went, what's that?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, how have we ended up in this position? It's crazy. But I think this is it. I think people are... I don't know, they're just not living in reality. It's the problem.
I think people are so blinkered in their views on particular things.
Because it got so big and you obviously you don't want to then go, oh well, it's not as popular anymore.
Nobody wants
you
don't to admit want to, that.
No, of course
and
that, not.
And that's fine, you know, but you have to face the kind of reality of it at times.
We have to face the facts, the Daleks are closing in on us.
Indeed. Yeah.
Or not, as the case may be.
You may want to deny this reality, but the reality of it is that it just...
I can't possibly comment.
No, I couldn't possibly comment.
Yeah. We should have got Al to say that.
I know. He would have done it.
He would have done it.
Definitely.
Oh, we should have said, can we Alan Yentob you?
There's always next time.
Next time we get him in, we'll get him to do that. The thing that we definitely know will be coming up next time is we're getting all this information about the centenary in DWM.
Yeah, whatever it's called. Yeah. So we've got information coming out about that.
So that's good.
We've obviously got the centenary itself coming up, and we'll do our review of that
in October.
But also, because it will have launched and gone live by the time this episode comes out, the big Jodie Whittaker era poll.
Oh, yes.
So you've got 13 categories that you can vote on. If you're a patron, there'll be some other ones that you can vote on that'll be Patreon exclusive as well. We've got stuff like best TV episode, best new writer, best director, best guest star, Doctor defining moments, all that kind of stuff. And it's going to be, and I should say from the outset, the centenary special will not be part of the voting.
Yeah.
Purely because it would be nice to do a big wrap up of Jodie's era and send it on its way.
Yeah.
But I think if we include the centenary in the rankings, it's going to be a DWM poll where it's either number one.
Yeah, everyone
or
will be
at the bottom because something happened that really pissed everybody off.
Yeah.
And everyone's going to vote for it to be at the bottom.
Yeah.
So the centenary special is not part of the voting, but maybe, like, in 6 months to a year's time, we'll come back round to it and we'll add it in as part of the rankings.
I guess if we do another Roddy's.
Yeah. Well, it'll be part of the rankings for that anyway.
Yeah.
So you can go. There'll be links in the description down below. Links all over the socials, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. Don't look at the Facebook because it's totally barren. I don't focus on Facebook.
Who uses Facebook anymore?
Yeah, who uses Facebook apart from neo-Nazis? So, we'll be doing the Jodie Whittaker era poll in the next couple of weeks as well, which will
be
very cool.
Good. I mean, I can't remember anything about any of that era.
I'm looking forward to you going through it and giving me the answers that you put
Director,
in.
Director, who?
Yeah.
Writers, who?
Yeah.
Episodes, what?
Well, don't worry. I put all the episodes the directors did next to them, so you go.
Oh, that's good.
Very good.
Oh, well done.
All the quotes and the moments from particular episodes, they're all in there.
Okay. It'll come back to me.
Yeah, Sagan's score, obviously, there's no Flux soundtrack out, so none of the scores from Flux are part of the voting. And only official releases and so on. But best alternate media adventure, all the games, all the live events, you know.
There were live events with Jodie Whittaker?
Well, there was Time Fracture.
Oh yeah, I never
She's
went.
She's in
so
it.
I'm
part of it.
I missed it, so.
Oh, you did, didn't you?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll have to stick the escape room in there as well, for people who did that.
Oh yeah, that was a thing.
That's still in Bristol, you know.
Is it?
That's still at Cabot.
Really?
We haven't done it.
No. Oh, we should probably do it.
Yeah, I know.
We should do that.
Let's do it.
Yeah. We've got enough people who would to do it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Enough saddos. Anyway, thank you very much for watching, ladies and gents.
Yes, thank you. I guess goodbye.
Farewell.
Well,
stick around if you want. I don't know.
Bye.